nothing I do is funny, right? Or let me put it this way. Everything I do is funny. I just screw up my delivery. Hello, and welcome to Parking Thought, the show where we highlight the good in the world, from the extraordinary to the everyday. You're going to want to like and subscribe wherever you happen to find us. I'm not kidding. I'm serious. Stop right now, hit the pause button, hit the subscribe button, and then come back and join us. All right, you're here. Curiosity is going to meet gratitude today. My name is Jacob, and I am glad you're here today. Joining us for this edition is Brent, and Brent is our good friend from Canada. He is one of the reasons I started podcasting and feel pretty comfortable behind the microphone. Brent, why don't you say hi to the audience here and tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, hello. So my name, Brent Gerva, and yeah, thank you. Jacob, it's actually your fault. You approached me to do a podcast together, and I was honored. So glad to be on this journey with you.
Yeah, so let's talk about that a little bit, because I think that's a fun story to kind of share. So those of you guys who have been listening for a while know I did 20 years in the military, and one of the things that I got to leave with was PTSD, which is both a curse and a blessing. It's a curse because I've lost years of my life through some very destructive behavior and thought processes that I still carry with me. It's also a blessing because it's forced me to be humble and receptive to others in a way that has been really helpful. Now, I'm still not perfect. I think there's six people in our house right now, and I think five of them don't want to talk to me because I just came home from work and decided to be focused on getting stuff done, including recording this podcast. And so I'll work on those relationships tomorrow. What was interesting, though, and Brent, did I ever explain to you why I picked your show to talk first about PTSD in public?
No, you didn't. So let's hear it.
All right. So, it's not something I want to wear. I've seen guys come out of the service and they wear their PTSD like a badge, and then that becomes what they're known by. And so it makes it really hard, from what I've been able to see, it makes it really hard for them to heal, because if they're healed, you know, if they're going through that healing process, then they lose the part of the identity that they've developed from being a victim and being broken. And I didn't know where I wanted to sit when it came to all that. I knew I wanted to talk about it, but I didn't want to wear it like a badge. And I wanted to be able to talk to somebody who's kind of like a stranger and be able to make it somewhat public, so I could get it out there. I thought that would feel pretty good. And then, you guys, like the Jupiter Broadcasting community. So can you tell us a little bit about Jupiter Broadcasting, and then I'll explain to you how this ties together, because I've been listening to you guys for years and I think you guys are great. So what is Jupiter Broadcasting for this audience?
Yeah, thank you. So Jacob, you and I have a shared interest in Linux, which is an alternative operating system that's free and open source. And so Jupiter Broadcasting is a podcasting network that sort of centers around the topics of Linux and open source. Anything from 3-minute news podcasts to long form human discussions. So, and they've been around quite a long time. Chris has been doing it for something like 13 years.
And so I've been a listener for a significant number of those years, at least 10, if not more. We could figure it out and do some math, but I'm bad at math and this show's not about math. About, what was it, a year, 2 years ago, you guys brought on Elle Marquez, and she was able to tell a story about what it was like for her to get involved with tech and really being vulnerable. And I didn't listen to her talk at first. I listened to all of the shows, the way that you guys were speaking about it, the way that the hosts were talking about how, wow, Elle really opened herself up. That's brave, right? And that was kind of the theme, you know, and you hear that from Chris, who is this very powerful, you know, voice, and powerful personality among the crew. You can tell that from listening to his shows. So you hear somebody like Chris say, you know, Elle opened up and that was really brave. And then somebody else would comment about how brave that was and how you know, she had done this thing and was able to share who she was and what her background story was. And so I still hadn't listened to her talk because I didn't want to go through the emotions that it would trigger for me. But I saw the way that everybody treated her in the community from what I could see. listening to the podcast and seeing the comments in some of the chat groups. And I said, okay, well, if there's going to be a community that's going to support me, let me tell the part of my story that involves Linux, and let's see if Brent is willing to have me on board. And so that's how I ended up reaching out, was I wanted to share. And if you guys hadn't set that example with Al, I would have just kept my mouth shut or found some other venue to do it. But because of who you guys were, it clicked. And it was a lot of fun recording the episode and just the friendships that have come from it. Nobody has made fun of me yet. Nobody has said a single negative thing. You know, the internet people think is a mean and vicious and hurtful place, and that has not been my experience. So either the Linux and Jupiter Broadcasting community is just the extraordinary, most nicest people in the world, or people have too many things to do so they don't tell me, you know, what they don't like about me. But it felt so good to get that out there. It was one of those, when I hung up with you, Brent, it took me like an hour to decompress. Wow. You know? Your brain's kind of going 100 miles an hour and you're kind of walking around. It took me a while to decompress and get back into, because I recorded it at work. I took the morning off, yeah. But I was still in the building.
Yeah.
And like well, you say, and you've really appreciated it too. Like,
yeah, absolutely. The reality for me after our talk was much the same. I walked around and had to sort of reset and think, what did I just experience? That was really quite a gift and really profound. So I think it's interesting that you and I both had a similar a sort of reaction to connecting that way. And yet, you know, I clearly didn't experience what you did, but I felt it in the ways and the stories that you shared.
And you were just a really good listener and kind of guiding me through that. Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying you're as good as, you know, the therapist I've seen over the years, but, you know, Brent, it was kind of, it was really healthy. And it felt really good. I hope other people have the opportunity, because your show is called Brunch with Brent, and it's this casual, you know, people who run Linux and kind of have a neat story, and you interview them. And it's really neat to see kind of the spectrum of people that end up being on that program. I haven't listened to your most recent episode. I did a book last week, so I've got a lot of catching up to do.
It's there when you need
but
it.
That's the great thing about podcasts, right? It's like, you know, you can pick them up when you need them to. You don't have to digest them all at once. And it's not like radio where you missed it. Oh, well, you know, like it's on demand for you. So I really appreciate the medium as well. Yeah, and I guess you were, so I got to let you know something else. I, because I associated you with some of the strong emotions that we had during the talk, I distanced myself from re-engaging you. Like that was months ago, and this is the first time we've talked,
yeah.
talked, you know, since, right? Because there are some emotions that are very tied to that conversation that mm-hmm. even listening to it again was kind of, you know, it gets you, you go through those swings. The peaks and valleys aren't as high and low as they were when we were recording, but they're still there. And so it's one of those like, oh, I'll listen to this now and then probably not again for 10 years. And that's okay.
Can I ask you a little bit more about that?
Yeah, sure.
So I'm curious about two things. So the first one is, how was it for you, the experience or the contrast of experience between doing the recording with me, so in real time telling the stories, and then the experience of listening back to that conversation? What was the difference between the emotions that came up between those two?
So I'm going to start with the technical side first that you didn't ask me for, because it'll be easier.
Great. That's context.
I was listening first in part because I wanted to find out where did the edits happen, you know, because it was a long interview.
Yes.
And so I was curious, like, how do they edit this down? I don't have the greatest voice, you know, and I'm not the best in front of a microphone. You know, how did they do this? So I used my natural technical curiosity to listen to it. There was a part of me that was like, wait, Joe is editing this? Like, the internet's Joe Risington is editing this? You know what I mean? Because I idolize that guy. And Drew as well. Like, you know, and they have their different takes and flavors and things. They're just great folks. But listening to it, it was, I could acknowledge, it felt like I was outside of myself looking in. Wow. And that part of it is really reflective and helpful. It's like, oh, I can see the mirror of my emotions, you know, and wow. I know what's coming next, and I can be prepared for it, and I can see this, and I can understand it. And I've got a show topic that I haven't brought up, so let's just make this a longer episode, because I'd rather talk this through with you. I do not like Frozen 2. Have you seen it yet?
I have not.
Okay, so this will be a little different than if you haven't seen it yet, and maybe some of the members of the audience haven't seen it yet, so as I describe this for you, it'll be good. The symbolism in Frozen 2 is perfect. Like, Disney absolutely nailed it. If you have ever gone through any mental challenges before, and it doesn't matter, the full spectrum of diversity and mental challenges that we face, whether it's anxiety, whether it's PTSD, whether it's just, you know, what you might call being shy, all of those things are expressed in Frozen 2 in this wonderful, beautiful metaphor that is so absolutely powerful, that it is hard for me to watch. Like, as much as I was emotionally triggered talking to you, I get that emotionally triggered watching Frozen 2, and that sounds really silly, but I can see the symbolism in what they've done in that movie. That just is totally incredible. I mean, at one point, all the characters are trapped behind this mist, right? So they're contained in an environment that is trying to destroy them. And each of the elements that's trying to destroy them is actually trying to help them, but they can't realize that until they go through some challenges. Right?
Like, that sounds powerful.
And so I'm gonna talk, right. And my kids don't notice it. They just love the movie and the singing and all of those things, right? And even some of the singing, all of the songs are beautifully crafted to speak on two or three different levels, right? They move the story forward. They're kind of fun. They're catchy. I mean, these writers really knock this thing out of the park. There's even one musical number in there that is like every 90s movie with dad jokes, like all summed up in one. It is like all of the cheesy music videos from the 90s summed up in one. And it's there at the exact spot in the movie that it needs to be, because the movie has to communicate that if you're dealing with these things in your life, don't take yourself too seriously, right? And so it's crafted to be there for that. Then there's other scenes and challenges where your best friend is lost, right? So as part of the experience, and the things that you thought were solid in your life that were holding it all together have to be destroyed in order to let out a flood of what you're holding back. And that your past has parts of it that you didn't consider and that are part of the truth that you have to go back and explore. And then at one point, you know, Anna or Elsa, Elsa's the one with the powers, right? So at one point she's like out in the ocean and she's drowning. And anyone that has dealt with depression and anxiety and PTSD knows what that feeling is like, where you are just surrounded. The waves are above you crashing and it's calmer under the water where you can't breathe. Hmm. And that is such a power, like, so you stay there to drown because you don't want to swim up because it's too chaotic and you don't know what to do otherwise. So you just stay there and drown. And that metaphor in that movie is so powerful that it's just like, I know that one of the consequences of when I'm emotionally triggered like that, I get grouchy. And so my family finds me being grouchy when that movie and that particular scene is on, because I don't think they see how beautifully perfect of a metaphor it is for the stuff that I've had to deal with inside of myself.
Wow.
And what that meant. And so once again, Brent, you're doing this to me where I can talk to you and all the people out there on the internet that listen to this, you know, like, I can talk to you and share this with you in a way. You've got to see the movie, and whatever, it's so enjoyable, but if you look for it for that symbolism and then also the conclusion, the way it wraps everything up is very respectful. And it's not that all solutions, you know, are perfect, right? It's so very respectful and so very well done. So right now I don't like Frozen 2 because it's perfect, right? I hope that if the people who made it listen to this, they understand, I don't like your movie because you did such a good job of it. Please recognize that as a compliment. And let me tell you, thank you, because it will resonate with people who don't understand, who don't go through those, like the PTSD PTSD being a blessing and a curse, right? There are people who will not experience what that's like in their life, and the movie speaks to those who want to help in a way that's also really healthy as well. And I think they did an amazing job. I mean, absolutely amazing. If the biggest compliment I could ever give somebody is to invite them over to my house for dinner. And if that director and that cast ever want to come over to my house for dinner, I will set the table. I will make the pancakes because I'm not a fancy cook, right? We will have some sort of breakfast food and we will enjoy the company. And that is the biggest compliment I could offer them. Thank you for creating this. And for what it does for people in general, but the difference it makes is not small in my life. And so, wow, they did a great job. Now you're going to have to watch it, Brent. I mean, this is...
You know, I had a zero interest in seeing it previous to this, but now you've got me. your narration of some of what happens in the film. That was just, even the way you described it really grabbed me. I'd almost just prefer to listen to that for a while. So thank you for sharing it.
You're so complimentary. Thank you. This is why we like Brent, guys. I mean, this is what Brent is like. He's a really good listener, and then he adds this layer of value of just letting you know that you are loved, and that is really powerful. And we need more Canadians like Brent in the world. No, I'm kidding. We just need to be more like that in our own world. We don't need more of Brent. We can live with one of them, but we need to do more of that in our world. Because you don't know when somebody's having a bad day, right?
You also never know the ways in which you shape people with the things that you say, even the small things. So why not make them all worthwhile?
I like that. Is that a quote from somebody, or is that coming? I mean, we're supposed to give you credit for that one. That was good.
That was probably just a distillation of a bunch of different amazing people and mentors I've read about and talked to, and et cetera, et cetera. So that's just me communicating what has shaped me in the past.
All right. So since we've already made this an extraordinarily long episode for this podcast, let's just keep going for a minute and let's switch gears to something completely light. All right. So Brent, I love questions that seem to cause me to think. And I've come across one recently that I would love to pick your brain about, right? So the scenario is you are in a building and you are standing next to somebody who accidentally pulls the fire alarm. You know there is no fire in the building. You can clearly see that. And the person says, oh, crap, I made a mistake. The alarm is now going off and everyone in the building starts to leave, right? Do you leave or do you stay? What would you do?
Oh, that's curious. Clearly, if because you didn't know the fire alarm was pulled, then you'd leave. That's the standard procedure.
Right.
But
right.
You know, yeah. And therefore your whole assessment of the situation is necessarily different. I like this.
Let's give you a little more flavor here. So, Brent, right. You're from Canada. It's negative 10 Celsius outside,
okay.
Right?
Fairly
so
warm.
How does that change your decision on whether or not you leave? Negative 10 outside. Yeah, go.
I will say, in some kind of crazy way, when you mentioned negative 10 Celsius, which I don't know what the Fahrenheit equivalent is, but it's far below freezing, I've experienced this exact situation that you're describing. When I was in college, I lived in a dorm, and this would happen all of the time. So I don't know if anyone's had that experience, but lots of people would, you know, pull fire alarms or burn toast at 3 a.m. or something like that. So often I have experienced this exact thing of the fire alarm going off when you know, because the last 5 times it's just been a false alarm. So you know it's nothing serious, which is a dangerous place to be, actually. And having to stand in the snowbank across the street in negative 10 temperatures, waiting for the fire crew to go through the building and make sure that it actually was just burnt toast. So I have experienced this. I will give a tiny little aside and I'll come right back. But it happens so often that somehow my miraculous brain learned to ignore it at 3 a.m. when it would happen. So closer to the end of that year in that dorm, I actually would sleep through these fire alarms, which was very worrying to my girlfriend at the time. So there's a little nice little story for you.
Okay. I like that response. So would you like to
answer your question, did it?
Well, it does paint the picture. I want to add another twist to it, right? So let's play this out, right? The fire alarm is triggered by accident. Now, every other switch you have in your entire life, right, you can turn it on or off. Why can you, as a user, not turn the fire alarm off if you accidentally pull it by accident? Why do you have to have the fire alarm come, or firefighters come, to turn the alarm off? Right, there was no fire, right? You just put the switch back up, call it a day, oops, my bad, right? Every other switch on every other device you have in your entire life, you cannot do that with the fire alarm, right? Like the fire alarm in your house, right? You talk about burnt toast. If that fire alarm starts going off, there is no button to say, hey, my bad, I'm taking care of it, shut up, right? You have to open up the windows and you have to start flapping. Then the neighbors are kind of looking over like, you know, what the heck's going on over there, right? Why the heck is there no like, hey, dude, shut up for 5 minutes. You know, give me 3 minutes, man. I'll get this, you know, out of here. Right? Like, why don't you have that? What is up with fire safety standards?
Yeah, I think the attempt is forced safety, or leaning on the side of being extremely cautious, because, you know, if someone pulls the fire alarm, like in your example, and we know it's false, then of course it would make a lot more sense to just press disable or, you know, turn the switch off. But that wouldn't necessarily satisfy the case where maybe there was something happening. So that maybe is unacceptable as a response to a potential fire alarm. So, curious.
Well, you know what I heard, because you learned to sleep through it, right? So I'm hearing, this reminds me of the password thing, right? How many times for years we were told, change your password every 90 days or 180 days or whatever. And I know you didn't do that after you left your corporate gig or whatever that was and started becoming your Uber professional photographer self, making millions of dollars and flying around the globe. Right? But, you know, there is this idea of, we were told to change our passwords, and then finally, you know, they commissioned a bunch of studies and realized, hey, wait a second, this might be a bad idea. People should just pick one really good password and like rock that out for like, you know, 2 or 3 years, make it really good. And part of me thinks that maybe we have that same sort of mentality of, we made a decision without data on what we thought would logically be safe, but we're not calculating that human beings are illogical beings in that process. Right,
human, like, logic versus human nature, two very different things.
Right. Yep. So human logic says, I need to go to bed. Human nature says, man, I'm having fun talking to Brent right now. We need to just keep this going, right?
Exactly.
All right. So there's the fire alarm question, because I want to know what you thought. And that happened to me too. It wasn't the dorm. It was the military barracks. But dude, somebody would come back drunk and just pull the fire alarm. And then finally, man, I looked at somebody who's like, hey, you need to get out there. We got to have a formation. The platoon sergeant's got to count us. And I'm like, he's not going to know how many of us we have. He doesn't know how many people are on pass. He doesn't know how many people are at the bar. Why do I have to stand there in the cold? It's a fake alarm. I'm putting earplugs in, because we had military issued earplugs. I'm putting earplugs in. I'm going to sleep.
Curious. So that's a twist I didn't expect. So you've had the same experience as I did, really, just different context, which was to hear it so often that you become desensitized, and then you start to not, well, you both start to not trust it, and also to just choose to ignore it. So
right.
Curious. But then what happens the day that it isn't a false alarm? That's my real question.
The odds of that are so, so small. And I would have had secondary indicators, right? So I would have had a secondary indicator, and there were no secondary indicators. It was just somebody else messing. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. Fascinating.
It was not cool. All right. So I'm going to talk to you about my interview with Rocco, right? Because Rocco listens to like every third episode. So I think I can time this right. So Rocco listens to it. So Rocco does a very similar Linux open source oriented podcast, and he heard my interview with Brent, for those of you guys that don't know who Rocco is, and he hears the interview I did with Brent, and he says, oh, I want to have this guy on. So he reaches out to me, and I tried to play hard to get. I said, I'm only available Sunday afternoons, and he said, okay, let's do it this date, and then we scheduled that, and I got real nervous around Rocco, because I was like, man, I already went through that emotional roller coaster with Brent. I'm gonna keep it like chill and on par with, you know, with Rocco. And so I started listening to every single episode to prepare, and he has some good questions in there, right? It's like, what would be one thing you would change about the Linux community, right? And I was like, oh, I've got to have a good answer, because I liked everybody else's answer, but I gotta have something else that's gooder. And then he got like bronchitis, man. And so because I was like, I hadn't listened to the other episodes and I didn't have a good answer to that question. And then he got sick and I was like, all right, I really hope he gets better. And I'm really glad that we're not recording the episode this Sunday and it's postponed for a week. Because about 3 days later, I found my answer. And so it was a fun thing to do. Now, we did have, that show went up a few weeks ago. And one of the comments on there, because he also has a Telegram group, was, oh, I started listening to it until your guest started singing, right? And I did sing on that one. I didn't sing for you, Brent, and I won't sing for the audience now. But it reminds me of this line, is that when I sing, people tell me that they love me. Because I can't sing. They have nothing complimentary to say about my singing. So they look at me and they say, Jacob, I love you. And then something else usually happens after that. But it's usually the Jacob, I love you because I can't sing. So this guy posts on the chat. He's like, I had to turn it off then. I had to write it back really quick because I didn't want that on the thread and Rocco's, you know, audience being scared. So I wrote back, I know I can't sing. It was only 45 seconds. Skip ahead. The rest gets good. So...
I was surprised that, actually, I'm going to take that back. I was more delighted to hear you sing because, A, that wasn't something I expected, so that was really a wonderful reaction in me, but also that most people wouldn't. Like, it takes a lot of... it's hard to sing in front of people, and you know, that podcast gets sent out to a lot of people, so that you even managed to somehow get yourself into song on a recorded podcast, I think is really impressive, whether or not you think it was good or not.
I didn't know how big his audience was before I did that episode.
No, you found out.
I looked at like some metric of like, I can't remember what it was. It was either his Telegram group size or it was something else. And I was like, this isn't that big of a deal, you know? And then I was like, that I saw like his YouTube or one of the other numbers like popped up of, you know, where you can see subscribers. And I was like, oh, this is a big deal. If this is proportional to my, you know, as you have different release channels for a podcast, I was like, if this is proportional, this is a big deal. So, yeah. And I had a couple people reach out and they were, oh, Cheese. Cheese reached out and he's like, I really enjoyed listening to you on that episode. And I was like, wow, Cheese reached out. Because the last time I reached out to him, I was like, I had taken some drugs and I was a little loopy. And it was for medical reasons, right? So I was just loopy and I was like, hey, man, one of your logos looks like this sort of like weird, like stereotype Chinese guy from like, you know, like the way they used to draw him back in the 30s, right?
That's the BSD logo, isn't it? BSD now.
I wasn't going to share that with the audience, but yes, you've called it out.
See if you can spot
and,
it.
And so we ended up having this conversation back and forth. I'm like, do you see this, man? And he's like, yeah. You know, it's, and this is over chat, right? He's like, yeah, I see this. I'm like, okay, so it's not just the drugs. but that's check. All I could see in that logo now. And Alan Jude, man, that dude is great. I'd love to interview that guy. Have you interviewed him on Brunch with Brent? I can't remember if you have.
I sure have. So Alan is a fellow Canadian, and so and I actually got in the same room together. I was near him and just made a quick trek out to his home. And we recorded in his, basically where he... Well, I guess it's in his business office where he does all of his work. So servers blazing in the back. He and I just sitting across from each other. It was really lovely. So you can check that out too.
Yeah, so we'll have to link to that if I get around to it when I create the show notes for this. Speaking of which, show notes, I have a great hack for any podcaster out there who wants to learn or wants to be able to get an automated transcript. If you upload your show to YouTube, right, and it, depending on the length, it'll take a little longer, a little shorter, but if you upload it to YouTube and then set the language as English, and come back in like an hour, YouTube will generate an automated transcript that you download as an SVV file. And if you use an app like Sublime Text or some of the other text editors that are out there, you can get rid of the timestamp it puts on there, and then the some of the other characters and stuff like that, and get it to where it appears like a full transcript, even though it's not perfect, but at least it gives you know, more words on a post or a blog post or whatever that will help Google find them, because Google doesn't search inside of the audio files that are linked on a page, but it will search the text of a page. And so that's one way to help people find your shows is to pull that automated transcript out of YouTube.
That's a great hack. So, I was wondering about that just the other day, so thank you.
Yeah. So it's not perfect. There's a way to automate it with a macro on Sublime Text, and I am that bad of a coder that I haven't figured out how to do it yet. So one of these days. All right, here's another short one, and then we'll end on this one because I can't make this a full episode, right? But in the Army, we would wake up and do our physical training, right? So we'd wake up and we'd have to do push-ups, sit-ups, and running, and some combination of that. There were other times that we had to do like log drills where you have like a telephone pole and four guys have to carry it and run around with it and other stuff. And who wants to be up at 6 a.m. doing this, right? Like, Brent, you're an evening guy. Do you want to be an evening guy and then have to wake up at 6 and throw a log on your shoulders with all the other guys and you're sweaty and nasty and... Oh, in Oklahoma, there were chiggers in the grass. And so we had to do push-ups and sit-ups on the grass. Oh, man, it was just, your skin just felt like crap. And then, not fun. And then I remember in college, I did sit-ups on the concrete, right? Because they didn't have mats for us. Mm. So I did like 82 sit-ups in 2 minutes. And then went out and did my 2-mile run and didn't realize I'd caused some permanent damage to my back. So that was fun. Anyway, before we would start our physical training, right, we'd stand there and kind of look at each other and wait for, you know, the sergeant to come out and you know, take accountability and then start the day. And I'd look at the guy next to me and be like, hey, man, you know, the only reason why I'm here is so I can be a male model after I retire.
And how's that?
Well, I'm a podcaster now, so it works out. No, I'm not a professional podcaster. Project manager, and I do a little podcasting on the side because, you know, nobody wants to hire me to be a male model, so I'm stuck here talking to you, and I'm loving it. So thank you for being here today.
Yeah,
it's kind of fun.
I have a lot of questions around that physical training stuff. I don't know if you've gotten to the end of your story there, but
that was it. That was the story. But what are the questions? Because I'm sure you're not the only one in the audience that has those questions out there. What do you got?
Well, you mentioned, you know, getting up early and doing this physical activity. And I'm curious if for you that was both really grueling and also there was something lovely about it. Because I know how, at least when I've gotten up early, which doesn't happen very often, but when I've gotten up early and done something like a run or a hike or... you know, every year my family, we do some hunting, so we get up early and go out into the forest. And but just getting that movement really early in the day can sometimes like affect your mood in ways that are really lovely. So I wonder if for you both of those existed simultaneously, both the hate for some of it, but there was something nice about it.
Very true, right? I don't think that hate and I think the emotions are really well connected. I'm not a scientist on that stuff, but yeah, I've seen just about every sunrise for the last 23 years. You know, it's a part of my day to see the sunrise in the morning. Now I don't sit there and watch it. Oh, look at that. Nice. And you know, I don't spend the half hour watching it come up, but I have seen every sunrise or just about every sunrise for the last 23 years. And you know, one thing you know, we talked about the emotions being close, right? I mentioned the other day to somebody, it was that being friends with someone and being enemies with somebody doesn't change the fact that you still have a relationship. It just changes the type of relationship that you have, right? So going back to our episode where we disagree, right? We can we can choose to be friends or we can choose to be enemies, but we will continue to have a relationship if we are in either one of those spaces. And so you have a relationship with your experiences as well, and you can choose to be enemies with that experience or you can choose to be friends with it, but you will have a relationship with your experiences. And that kind of ties into what we say at the end of every episode, where, you know, remember, in a world where you can be anything, why not choose to be grateful? If you're going to choose to have a relationship with what you're doing, what sort of relationship do you want that to be? And if it's one of gratitude, everyone will benefit. So, Well, we just went deep again, man. I was trying to end on a light note.
Just happens with you and I.
I do deep thinking this late at night. So what are you editing for photos after you hang up with me? What do you got on the docket for photos today?
You know, I will unfortunately say that most of my photography work has been canceled recently since some of this, keeping people away from each other stuff. But so I've got nothing.
Back to landscapes then.
I did send you, did I send you that landscape I took a little while back of the snow and the sun setting and that kind of thing? I think I did, but maybe I didn't. I meant to.
I think you did also.
I'll send it again, or I'll go take some more. That's great. It's actually an opportunity for me, and I mentioned that I don't get to do this often enough, is to just go for a walk with my camera outside of the idea that it needs to be for anything. So typically when I have my camera these days, it's always for an assignment of some sort. And that relationship that I have with the camera has really changed from when I first fell in love with it. And I found myself not taking it whenever I go for hikes and those kind of things, just because I'm trying to create distance. But maybe this is a real gift and an opportunity to rekindle that connection.
All right, so the last landscape photo you sent me had mountains in the background on January 28th.
Oh, that's a while ago.
Yeah, so that one
you
was a while ago.
Another.
I deserve another. I think the world deserves another, right? The way you see the world is worth sharing and talking about. And then I sent you the BSD logo now too. So that was a thing.
Yep.
And then we talked about we've been doing exchanges on some of the comedians and classic musicians that we both enjoy. So that was a lot of fun, man. Mm-hmm. Your chats are pretty enjoyable. So I like them.
Thank you. Thank you. I mean, there's two people in a chat, so the thanks goes right back to you.
Well, I probably do too much talking. And with that, because I've done too much talking for this episode, I know I promised you guys I thought this would be a short podcast, and then you get somebody on like Brent, and I just talk, and it happens. Speaking of which, how many people that you had brunch with Brent with have actually eaten any of the food, right? Because you were with Alan in person, and everybody else, you call it brunch with Brent, but you didn't order me anything. There was no DoorDash to where I was at.
Huh.
I'm not saying I feel slighted, but I'm saying there's an opportunity here that I think the show is really missing, is you were sucking down applesauce, and I was just sitting there.
You didn't get the delivery?
No donuts and nothing. Oh, my bad. The security stopped it. They didn't want to interrupt the guy recording. I see how this works. Oh, well played, sir. Well played.
A bit of a story behind the name that maybe I could share. It's a bit of an inside joke. As you may know, or you will now know, is that I tend to get hungry quite frequently throughout the day. I'm the kind of person who is just constantly eating. So actually, I have a set of trail mix right in front of me right now. So there's just something about, I don't know, the dietary choices I've made or my metabolism or whatever, that I'm just around food and I love food and I try to eat pretty healthy. So, but the joke is that the name of the podcast, Brunch with Brent, just came up, you know, through the crew at Jupiter Broadcasting. We're all pretty close friends, and it just came out of nowhere from Chris, who just suggested that it was kind of a joke that it should be called Brunch with Brent. But it's because every time I start, you know, I go to start a podcast, especially in the recording studio, I have to have like a meal first. I have to have some kind of sustenance to keep me going, because as you know, some of this knowledge work, you know, when you're leading a discussion or you're trying to put a podcast together, it's surprisingly daunting in terms of how much energy it uses. So being completely fueled up is my necessity. Some people can just wing it without, but Brunch with Brent is basically, I gotta eat first, so you may as well join me.
Yeah, sounds good. And if you'll notice, if you look at the YouTube video for the interview I did with Rocco, I was following your example and sucking down applesauce and drinking water on the side.
Well done. So well done, young grasshopper.
I did not realize how he was... I thought it was an audio podcast, right? There was a part of me in my brain that did not comprehend. The camera angle shows it up my nose. Like, you know, like I didn't... Like, I just... I know better, but I was not thinking, and it was just such a good interview, minus everything about it from that perspective. It was a really good interview, you know, like, but yeah, it was a lot of fun. All right, let's wrap this up, right? So this is the part where I tell you that the best way to say thank you for this episode is to share it with somebody that you know. If you're just joining us for this episode, then we're glad you can make it. And if you want to stick around for the long haul, then remember this podcast can be delivered directly to your favorite device by using the subscribe links over at parkingthought.com, all one word. You can also find this show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, the YouTube, right? Because believe it or not, YouTube should have a "the" in front of it just for the fun of it. And as we end each episode, we like to ask you to participate in a challenge to remember that in a world where you can choose to be anything, why not choose to be grateful? And I'm not sure if you can hear my daughter dancing up above the closet.
Yeah.
But that's why this is not a Drew edited podcast, because Drew would be like, that recording quality is, or not Drew, Joe would be like, the recording quality is on. And I'm like, yeah, it's an episode.
Is that
going out to the world?